So this morning, I'd like to talk about a subject that I'm not sure that I've thought all the way through. And I know I haven't thought all the way through, and I know that there's going to be some unturned aspects of it when we're done. And yet I hope that we can at least get a sense of where we fall in this picture. And that is the subject of I'm just going to call it accountability and responsibility. And when I say that, we have been given a life. We have been given time. We've been given a slot in history. And we can look back and we can look at how all the billions of people have used their slots in history. And we can look forward by reading the scriptures and see what eternity is somewhat like. But, yeah. And the title this morning is just, it's taken out of the book of Esther, and it's just called For Such a Time as This. And I'm going to think, you know, all of us today are in circumstances. We all are in circumstances. We all have circumstances, and we are in circumstances. We struggle to deal with them sometimes. Have you ever felt elated with your circumstances? Maybe you got a promotion, or maybe you got a raise, or maybe you had a windfall, or maybe you got an inheritance, or maybe you things are looking up, and we call it positive circumstances. We've in Arkansas we had said we's walking in tall cotton. You ever heard that term? We're walking in tall cotton. That means that things are looking up, and we're in good circumstances. We're elated with those. And sometimes we are bored with circumstances. We just, you know, life is just, there's nothing happening, and we don't have any trips on the horizon, and we don't have any, there's nothing exciting going on, and it's just boring, and we're bored with circumstances. Sometimes we're confused with circumstances. You know, circumstances can be, things just happen, and we don't know why or what or for what reason. Sometimes we're angry with our circumstances. Things are happening and we don't like it, and there's nothing we can do about it. We just get angry with them. Is there a rhyme or a reason for the cycles of these things that we find ourselves in? Now, sometimes we're at the top and we're elated, and sometimes we're down here and things just pile in on us. Job felt that way. Job was a man who experienced both of those cycles. You know, the book of Job comes in, and he had a fortune, and he had things going. He was a man who had life clicking along, very well oiled and smooth, and it was going well, and then it fell apart, bad. And the book of Job actually gives us a reason for that. But is the same reasons, do they hold true for us? Is there a rhyme or a reason? Is there a dice that is rolled and whatever pops up, you know, that's what's going to happen to us? Or do we believe in a sovereign God who controls all things? When life is good, we say God is blessing us. But when life is low and our circumstances are bleak, do we still believe in a sovereign God? You know, for many of us, when we're in those bleak circumstances, it's hard for us to... We deal with those emotions of anger and confusion, and depression, if you will. And it's hard for us to really to look objectively or beyond just what's right here in front of us. It's hard to do that. And we don't really need to look that far ahead. We just need to, with God, just make one more step. We're just holding on to. But looking back, after we go through those bleak circumstances, we can all look back in our life and see times when we were through, when we were in these valleys. When we look back, we have a better picture of how it affects our character and our worldview. You know, really, the way we look at life now often is determined by some of the things that have happened to us in the past, some of the circumstances that we've gone through, for good or for bad. But the trials, the trying circumstances, are called trials because they test our character and they shape our character. And that's why they're called trials. And James says that we should count it all joy when we fall into diverse temptations or diverse trials, because the trying of our faith worketh patience. Or it actually means that patience means that it makes us hold closer, tighter, with more tenacity to God. And it says, let patience have the perfect work. And that's through those trials. And those trying circumstances actually affect and make us stronger, or they make us give up and break. Where if it was all positive, all at the top, if we were always on that plateau of good circumstances, then God would have a lot of complacent Christians, right? I think he would. And God doesn't like complacency, lukewarmness. He does not appreciate that at all. And so, just like clay that's in the potter's hand is stressed, tested, stretched, rocks are picked out, lumps are picked out, it's rolled back up into a ball and moved and worked again. So we are in God's hands as we allow him, or whether we allow it or not, it still happens to us. But it's just, if we recognize God as a sovereign God, it allows us to hold on to him more tenaciously. So to start with here, I'd like to take two scriptures here. One is in Matthew 25, and it's in the parable of the talents, and then the other ones are, I probably won't read it, but it will be in the book of Esther. But the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, starting in verse 14, is a parable of what I'm going to say is of our life. And there's probably different angles that you can take from this, but I'd like to take this as a parable of our life, or the kingdom of heaven that we as Christians are a part of. I'd like to take this as us given this slice of history to live. We have been given today, and this life I'm going to call it as today, we've been given that, and we have been given a responsibility to live for God's glory. That's what God has created mankind for, is to live for his glory and to bring glory to him. And God has done everything in his power. Well, yeah, he's done everything to make it, to give us the power, to give us the wherewithal, to give us the tools to live for him. But because he's created man for his glory, he gives them a choice. He wants it to be a voluntary life. So we have the choice to live for him, and we have the choice to live for ourselves. And this is, in this parable, this is likened as giving us talents. These tools or things that we can use for his kingdom. So let's read verse 14. Says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with him. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliveredst unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliveredst unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee, that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance, but from him that hath not shall be taken away, even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, we'll see that it illustrates the life that was given there. These 3 individuals had received varying amounts with the same responsibility. They had received varying amounts with the same responsibility. Maybe the 5-talent man had more of a was in a better position to use more things. He probably had more. More education, we could say. He had more education. He had more knowledge. He had more things taught to him. And he was in a position where he could handle 5 talents. So the Lord gave him 5 talents. Or the king, whatever, there, gave him 5 talents. And he said, I'm going to leave it with you. And when I come back, then I want to hear what you did. And the other man, you know, was maybe had a little less opportunity, but he still had something. And he said, I've got 2 talents, I'm going to leave it with you, and when I come back, I want to hear what you did. And the third man got 1 talent, and same responsibility. So all of these people, they had varying amounts, but they had the same responsibility. And they had responsibility and they had accountability. The responsibility was given to them when the man left. The accountability was exacted from them when he came back. And that's the way it is with us. We were created by God for his glory. And we were given life as a gift from God. So life has been given to us as a gift. And we are given time. We all have 24 hours in a day, and we are given time. We don't know. We've got the 24 hours in a day, but we have our birth and we have our death. And we're given this time to use the talents that God has given us, or the gifts that God has given us, to use them for His glory and His kingdom. So we've been given the responsibility when we were put into this world. But we have the accountability comes when we are at the end of our life, after our life is over with. That's when the accountability comes to give account for how we used it. Now we have the choice, and we can use it any way we want to, and that's fine. That's the choice. But the accountability is exacted from us at the end. And we are given that choice in how we use the time we're given. We're told, we're given advanced knowledge of how the use of our time affects our eternal destinies. So we can read in God's word how that is given us and how we use that. We're even given the option or the opportunity to erase, as long as we're in this life, to erase or to start over from previous bad choices. We can start new choices with a new life through Christ. And like I said earlier, responsibility is the task or way that we should live that's given to us at the beginning of life. And accountability is simply the test results of how we did our responsibilities. So this that was given to me here in a different way. I went to the license bureau here the other day, a couple months ago, and I wanted to get a commercial driver's license, and they gave me this thick-ish book to study, and it's got a lot of terms in there that are kind of, it makes dry reading anyway, I can tell you that. And they said, study this, there's a written test that you have to pass, and then there's a skills test that you have to pass. So to get your driver's license. So we take this and study. And that's a responsibility. This responsibility is given to study this book. So they give the advance instruction. So you absorb that for a while, and then you go in there and you want to take the test, all right? So we take the test. Yep, write it all down. Yep. It's all good. Get it all, and you get a permit. So that works, but this is just a real basic illustration. But the accountability part of how well you studied and how well you actually absorb what you study comes when you actually go down there with the examiner and demonstrate this. So for me, I can absorb a book and memorize it and rattle off all the facts, and that's not hard. But the harder part is doing the demonstration, especially for someone that's not coordinated like me in that respect. So we went down, and the book part of it, you can remember it. We passed the first part of it, and the second part was good. But then when it comes to driving, there was something that was put in there that I hadn't really done before. So we didn't pass. Accountability came in. The instructor didn't say, where have you been? What are you doing? He just said, you have some options, but you get a do-over on this one. So we got a do-over. Had to go back and do it again. But that's the accountability. That's accountability, is that you have to... It was basically an accountability of how well I knew what I said I knew. How well I can do what I said I could do. That's a very crude illustration. But we have been given those clear instructions. We've been given instructions on how to live. We've been given instructions on the fruits of righteousness. We've been given instructions on how to live for Christ. We've been given instructions on how to be righteous and to be holy, and that we need to do this so that we can live with God. But we are still here, so we haven't had that accountability exacted from us yet. You can turn to the book of Esther here. Sometimes when we are in these circumstances of life, we don't know how to make sense of them. We've been given for many of us, we've been given the opportunity to live in America here. And for many of us, we have experienced plenty of food to eat all our life. There's probably been some that have had to go hungry, maybe, I don't know, but I don't think so. By and large, here in our area, in our culture, we've all had plenty of food. We've not had to go hungry. Like you read of people in maybe Yemen or in Bosnia, there was some, back when they had that war there in the mid-90s, there was orphanages there with children that were very hungry. There wasn't enough food to go around. And that song, Can You Hear the Prayer of the Children? I don't know if you remember that song or not, or if you know it. That was written because of those orphans in that time period, that they would go to bed hungry. And that's in history, there's been people that way. But we've been blessed to live in a country where we've had food. We've been blessed to live in a country where we haven't experienced war. We haven't experienced famine. We haven't experienced starvation. We haven't experienced pestilence to the degree that the plague in the Middle Ages, when people would just die. I mean, just thousands of people just died, wiped out whole families, etc. We haven't experienced that here. And so, in a sense, in history, we are living on maybe the top of the circumstance cycle. We're in good circumstances here. And our life is made up of that. Now, we have bad circumstances. We have things that are not good in our life. But we operate in by and large, in relatively decent circumstances. And we're normal. We're normal in the sense that in our good circumstances, we have better times than other times. I'm not trying to minimize our bad experiences or bad circumstances at all. I'm just saying that we have become somewhat accustomed to having a good life. Now, Esther was someone who came from a home where she experienced loneliness. And she was someone who came, she lost both of her parents. I don't know this for sure, but Mordecai was her cousin. And Mordecai was, her Esther's parents were Abihail. Abihail was her father, I believe. And he would have been an uncle to Mordecai. But it says that Mordecai was actually taken from Judah in the first wave, when Nebuchadnezzar went over there and took the first wave over. And I'm not sure, but that Esther's parents didn't perish in that time frame. I'm not sure. But her parents died, and she was left an orphan. So she experienced loneliness. She experienced the loss of her parents, both parents. And she also had to experience getting to know a new culture. a foreign culture without her parents. But her cousin took her as his own daughter, which was very good of him. So in this story, we have the main characters. We have the king, Ahasuerus. He was also known as Artaxerxes the First or something like that. Just depends on whether it's Greek or Persian or Hebrew. But in the Hebrew version, it's Ahasuerus. And he was the king here in this setting. He had a wife that did not obey one of his commands and publicly humiliated him, supposedly, even though he was drunk when he made the command. And yeah, anyway, he had listened to some bad advice, but he was wifeless or queenless here, and he wanted a new queen. But Vashti was the queen. We don't know much about her. And we have Mordecai, and Mordecai was the cousin of Esther. And he was one that also experienced hardship. He was taken from Judah and transported to Babylon. And I don't know if he was, I don't know how old he would have been. And I'm not even sure how this all worked exactly. If he was I don't know how much time there was. But I would have thought that it was more time that elapsed than this. But it says that he was taken in the first, when Jeconiah or Jehoiakim was taken. And then we also have Haman. What do you all know about Haman?
He was a very wicked man full of pride who wanted everybody to bow down before him. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Haman. Did you notice there's not a lot of little boys named Haman around here? Haman was not a good man. Not a good man. He was full of pride, and even the king had actually commanded people to bow down to him, actually. So, I mean, that was a king's thing. But Haman was also a vain person. But one thing that I thought was hugely interesting, and you all probably knew this, but the book of Esther actually gives some specific details on that. But Haman was an Agagite. Haman was a descendant of Agag. You remember King Agag in First Samuel? So he was a descendant of Amalek. Haman was. And Mordecai was a direct descendant of Saul. It says in verse 2, or chapter 2, verse 5, it says that Mordecai was the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. And this Shimei was the same Shimei that went after David. He was of the house of Saul, and he went after David and cursed him and threw stones at him and all that. You know, that was a direct ancestor of Mordecai and Esther. So he was, and Kish was Saul's dad. So they were, you remember Saul, Shimei was of the house of Saul, it says. I don't know if he was a son or a brother or nephew or what, but he was of the house of Saul. But Saul was given the very specific job of killing all the Amalekites. That was his job. And Saul made excuse for himself that the people spared Agag. And Samuel went and killed Agag. But whatever it was, because Saul didn't kill them all, there was a remnant that was left. And it all ended up, you know, way out here in captivity. There was Haman, the proud, whatever. I still think he had a hatred of the Jewish race that went way beyond Mordecai. And Mordecai also, I think it was more than just the specifics here. But whatever, It does give those details in this book here, that it gives Mordecai's lineage and it gives Haman's race, nationality, whatever. So in this, we have this historical circumstances in this time period that there's a lot of history behind here and a lot of things that are. That are a lot of things that are given, but there is a point in more of the greater circumstances, not just Esther's herself, but in the greater circumstances where the lineage of Christ is actually threatened because of Saul's disobedience. Way back, there was those consequences that the lineage was of Christ was threatened here. The Jews were under a threat of being totally eradicated because of Saul's disobedience. But whatever the point, however that all works out, Ahasuerus the king needed a wife, supposedly. So he went searching for a wife. And if you were the king, you could do whatever you wanted to, I guess. And he went and got all these girls to brought them into his town so that he could pick a wife from them. And Mordecai, he decided that Esther would be a good choice to enter into this thing, this contest or whatever you call it. So Esther went to this, but she was instructed not to reveal her nationality, her lineage, where she was from, what race she was. So she went there, and she was actually the king's favorite of all of these girls. So she became the new queen. Well, then we have the altercation between. Well, at the end of verse 2, or chapter 2, verse 21, Mordecai, Esther is the queen, and Mordecai found out about a conspiracy against the king, and he sent a messenger and told Esther, and Esther took it to the king, and the king made a note of this, and it was registered in the official record that Mordecai exposed a plot to kill the king. So Mordecai was a loyal individual. His loyalty was on record that he was a loyal individual. I don't know if Haman had any official record of being a loyal individual, but the king thought he was a loyal individual. Actually, the one commentary said that, which I don't know if it's, I don't know how they figure this, but they figure that these two eunuchs, that Bigthan and Teresh, were connected with Haman somehow, but Haman's name wasn't in it. I don't know if Haman seemed to, his character was such that he wanted to consolidate his power. And he was just one step under the king. He was the prime minister. Anyway, so Bigthan and Teresh had this conspiracy. Mordecai exposed it. His loyalty was there. But then Haman, going on in chapter 3, Haman had a growing hatred of Mordecai. Mordecai would not bow. Haman, every time Mordecai, he would go out, because Haman was the prime minister, he had the charge of all the other officials in the kingdom. And Mordecai was one of these officials. We don't know what he was, but he was an official, not necessarily a porter, but an official of some sort, because he was there. He had a specific job there, and he was commanded to bow or reverence Haman. But he wouldn't bow himself down or prostrate himself before Haman like Haman wanted him to. Well, it didn't seem to be a problem with the king, but it was a definite problem with Haman. And Haman had designs on taking care of Mordecai, but he was more concerned. He could have just had Mordecai killed, but that was beneath him. He wanted to do this in a spectacular way. So Haman went, and you know the story. Haman went to the king and he said, "Hey, Ahasuerus, you know, we got a problem here. We got these Jews that are in their kingdom here, and they're just taking all the life out of the kingdom, and we can't have them here because they're..." Anyway, Haman was kind of like a Hitler. He wanted to wipe them out. So the king said, "Oh, yeah, Haman, yeah. Just here's my ring. You just go make a law. We'll just take care of it. Yeah, sure." So I don't think Ahasuerus was real... I don't know. Didn't think things through real far. So Haman takes the king's ring. He takes the seal. He makes the letter. He writes it up, stamps it, sends it out. So in 1 year, this was the end of December, and in January, such and such day, we're going to wipe him out. 1 year from today. So they sent this out, and I guess he figured the Jews could just live with that realization, and for 1 year that would make it worse for him. Well, Mordecai heard about this, and it put him in a tizzy, because he knew that the king's law, the Medes' laws, could not be changed. The Persians or whatever, their laws could not be changed. So this put fear in his heart. He was a Jew. He went and he put his sackcloth and ashes on. Of course, with sackcloth and ashes, he can't come back in the king's court. But he was out in the streets there with his sackcloth and ashes, and he was wailing and mourning, and other Jews were wailing and mourning. And somebody came and told Esther that... No. Yeah, they told Esther, and Esther was wondering what's happened to him, and Haman sent a messenger, Mordecai sent a message to Esther that she needs to go into the king and ask him, petition the king. And Esther said, "I can't do it. If I go into the king and he didn't ask me to come, he can just kill me if he doesn't like it." And then Mordecai tells Esther these words. He said, "But who knew that you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" So he's just saying, "Esther, remember, you were a nobody. Now you're the queen. And these circumstances did not just happen. God had a purpose for this. And you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this." So this is your part of history. This is your life, Esther. Your responsibility is here. You have been given this time, and your responsibility is to save our people. And you will be held accountable for what you do or do not do. Those are my own words, but this is what Haman is saying. Mordecai is saying, you will be held accountable. You have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. So Esther says, "Okay, I'll do it. And if I'll make a fast and pray hard for 3 days, and I'll go to the king, and if I die, I die. But I will have done what I could." So Esther, they proclaimed a fast, and the Jews fasted, and the Jews prayed, and they prayed. And on the third day, Esther went in there, and the king was holding court. The king was there, and you know, they're talking, and Haman's there. And Esther comes in. King's like, "Who's there? I didn't call anyone." But then he sees Esther. Oh, he hadn't seen her for a while. "Yeah, come in, Esther." He holds out the scepter. Esther's heart was working pretty hard, I'm pretty sure, because she didn't know if she was going to go out of there in the casket or if she was going to go out in favor with the king. But the king wanted to see her. So She said, you know, King, I haven't seen you for a while. I want you to come to my house. I want to make lunch for you. So, or whatever. I want to make a meal for you. So, oh, yeah, he does. And she said, I want Haman to come too. Oh, good. So Haman, he went and he had this thing and they enjoyed the meal and everything was good. And she said, what's your request? What do you want? What do you really want, Esther? She said, well, I want to have another meal tomorrow and then I'll tell you. Okay. So Haman, he goes out and he's on the top of his, he's all excited because he said, things are looking up for Haman. He goes home but as he goes out through this court, and there's old Mordecai standing there. Oh, he hates Mordecai. He hated Mordecai. So, things are still looking up for him, but he got to deal with Mordecai. So he decides to go home. He tells his wife about it, and his wife said, well, you're the prime minister, aren't you? Just kill him. Well, how do I kill him? Well, just hang him on a gallows. That'll work. Yeah, he says. So he gets his phone out, and he calls the workmen, and they came, and they built this big gallows. And they built a big, tall gallows. They're going to hang Haman on this, or Mordecai on this gallows. So they got this thing built in record time, and morning comes around, and, you know, Haman, he's got to get permission from the king to take out one of his people, so he decides to go in early. Well, Haman's going to go in early. He's going to make sure to wipe this out before supper time because he wants to eat supper in peace. So Haman gets in there real early, but he didn't know, but the king was having a bad night. He's having a bad night. The king probably ate too many blueberries. I don't know. But he was having a real problem sleeping. Oh, he couldn't sleep. And the king decided he wanted someone to read to him. So they didn't get nursery rhymes out. They got the book of the Chronicles of what they did what people did for him. And they started reading, and they start reading about Mordecai, how he got Bigthan and Teresh and told them about the king, how the plot was, they were going to kill the king. And the king got to thinking about this. You know, I could have been killed. And, you know, Mordecai, he's a good guy. He really is a good guy. And, you know, did we ever do anything? Did we ever say thank you? Did we send him a card? Did we give him any money? Did we help him? Did we promote him or anything? No, we didn't do anything. And the king goes, what? What? Why didn't we do anything for someone that was loyal like that? I don't have a whole, not everybody's loyal. We're going to have to fix this, but it's starting to get daylight. And he hears somebody out there, and there's a knock on the door. And he said, what is it? Haman said, it's just me. I'm coming in. Oh, Haman, yeah, I want to talk to you, he said. He said, you know, Haman, what can we do for someone that I want to honor? I want to honor somebody, and I really want to honor, but what can we do for somebody that I want to honor? Oh, Haman thought, this will be good. Yeah, he's meaning me. I mean, nobody else is better than me. So Haman said, well, you know, he said, get your horse and your chariot and your, the one with that says King of Persia on it, get that one and get your uniform, your crown, and get the most trusted servant that you have. And have him run through there with a loudspeaker through town and just tell everybody, this is what's done to them for the man the king delights to honor. You know, make him look like a king. Yeah, Hazira said, that's a good idea. He said, I like it. That's good. I would have not thought of that, but that's good. He said, Haman, you know what? Mordecai did this for me. He said, I want you to be the trusted servant. You're the good trusted servant. So why don't you put Mordecai in that chariot and you run through there and tell everybody about this. Oh, Haman choked. Oh, he got a red face. He thinks about this gallows and oh, he hates that suggestion. That was a terrible thing. He wasn't hungry for breakfast anymore. And the king started feeling better about this. This is a good idea. So He said, make haste, Haman, hurry up and do it. So Haman goes out, and he probably toned that loudspeaker down as much as he could, but he went through town, and he got this thing done, and he went home. He forgot all about that. He was sure after the king told him to do this that he would never allow him to kill Haman or to kill Mordecai. That would not work. So he goes home and he is so embarrassed. Well, it's time for supper. He goes to the banquet and Esther makes the good food and there he is. And they eat the food, and the king comes back. He said, what can we do? What can we do? What do you want, Esther? I can give anything to you up to the half of the kingdom. Esther said, well, all I ask is that you spare my life. The king goes, what? Yeah, she said, just spare my life and the life of my people. He said, well, who in the world is wanting to kill you? She said, well, Haman right here. Well, Haman is having a bad day all the way around. His circumstances are going downhill fast. See, Haman had a life, and Haman's life was catching up to him. His responsibility and his accountability, it was catching up to Haman. Haman had a life, and it was becoming accountable for his actions. Oh, the king was angry. Oh, he was angry. He went out to the garden and he stomped around and he yelled and he threw glass and he was beating on the walls. He was angry. And then Haman saw this was in a bad situation and he was crashed out on before Esther there. And oh, please, please. And he was just blubbering and blubbering and crying. He was very un-prime minister-like. Well, the king comes back in and he sees him there and he wants to kill him right now. He said, what? We kill him. Take him away. And there was a servant there who said, you know, he built a gallows to hang Mordecai on. Good. He said, hang him on there. That's good. They hauled him off and he comes home and his wife looks out the window. What's going on? They have servants there. You're hauling Haman out there to the garden, and they get the rope on him, and they jerk him up there. Whew. She didn't like that at all. But there's Haman hanging high. Poor Haman. He made a trap for Mordecai, and he fell into his own trap. Haman actually, his accountability came in a spectacular fashion. And Mordecai actually got Haman's job. So with Mordecai as prime minister, the destruction of the Jews is still coming up. Their date is still coming up. And the letter had said that all the neighbors could kill the Jews and no police would actually interfere. That's pretty much what it said. No police would, you could just go and kill Jews and no police action would call. You could call 911 all day long and nobody would come if it was a Jew you were killing. But they couldn't change the law because the Persians had this funny law that once it was done, you can't change it. But Mordecai was like, what can we, or Esther went to the king and asked him, what can we do about this? And the king said, well, I don't know, but you figure out something. That's what he said. Okay, so Esther, and he gave the ring, his ring that he had given Haman, the seal, he gave that to Mordecai and Esther. And they went and they made another letter. And they basically wrote the same thing, the same privilege to the Jews that said they could defend themselves and no police would come. Well, and that went out with the current prime minister, which would have the king's blessing as well, and that was a later version. So the neighbors decided that, you know what, I think the second letter would actually be better for me to follow than the first letter. So I'm going to help the Jews. So most of the neighbors decided to help the Jews. And Haman's family was pretty sure they were going to avenge their dad. Anyway, and they killed all of Haman's family off pretty much over that. But Esther took her responsibility seriously. And she did what she could. She exercised her, in the circumstances she found herself in, she exercised her responsibility well. The accountability that she had was that she did the best she could in her circumstances. And it turned out well. She saved her people. Mordecai exercised his life well. And he was a cog in the wheel that helped save the people as well. But there, and his accountability was that he had done well. But Haman's accountability was that, or his result was that he did not do well. His family disappeared. And that's kind of a dramatic story. And yet, in our life, we are in the point right now that for such a time as this, we are here and we have the circumstances and the life choices that we make now. What are we going to do about them? You know, accountability is simply the results of how we did our responsibilities. And I'd just like to leave the challenge to be faithful in those responsibilities, because we are all called to the kingdom for such a time as this. Let's stand for prayer. Father, thank you for the time that you've given us here. Help us to be faithful and to execute our responsibility well. Would you give us power and grace for the battles that we face, Lord? Help us in our battles. Help us to be sold out for you and to be willing to live for you in all that we do and all that we say, in our non-resistance, in our life. Would you bless each one here, Lord, in our life, in their lives, as you see best. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. You may be seated, and let's have a song.